You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much and good morning. And we appreciate you listening to the Civic Media Network on this Friday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you are with us. It's the top of the hour, and that means it's time for some you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
All right, Madison police stop black drivers at higher rates, and that has drawn some scrutiny. Officers are once again pulling over thousands of black and Hispanic drivers in the city at disproportionately high rates and issuing many of them citations for speeding, failure to yield, or other traffic infractions. Drivers of color have long been overrepresented in the department's traffic enforcement, according to a Cap Times analysis. In a statement to the Cap Times, Police Chief John Patterson cautioned that driving patterns can vary by time of day, location, and other conditions, which can make direct comparisons among demographic groups more challenging.
In other headlines with stuff you need to know, going over to the Middle East this morning, it turns out that Iran is trying to force shippers to comply with a new protocol for transiting the Strait of Hormuz or risk attack. Tehran has laid out a set of new rules for vessels seeking to transit the strait, at least according to a document that was seen by CNN. They want pressing ahead with efforts to formalize control over the waterway in defiance of U.S. warnings. Entitled Vessel Information Declaration. That's the document, and it's an application form issued by Iran's newly created Persian Gulf Strait Authority, the PGSA, and must be completed by all transiting vessels to ensure safe passage. It was shared with CNN by Lloyd's List and another shipping industry source who wished to remain anonymous.
All right, and another piece of S you need to know. A federal appeals court appeared ready Thursday to reject Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's effort to punish Democratic Senator Mark Kelly over his call to U.S. service members to refuse illegal orders. A majority of judges on a three-member panel, so that would be two, at the D.C. U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals spent more than an hour and a half throwing cold water on arguments pushed by the Justice Department to revive Hegseth's plans, which were shut down earlier this year by a federal judge who said they were unconstitutionally retaliatory. Judge Florence Pan, an appointee of former President Joe Biden, said, "These are people who serve their country. Many put their lives on the line, and you're saying that they have to give up their retired status in order to say something that is a textbook example taught at West Point and the Naval Academy that you can disobey illegal orders." All right, and then here's the big story, yeah. Jamie. You got it. You got the big one of S you need to know.
It is. And if you've been paying attention or saw some of the headlines, it turns out that there was quite the cyber attack that shut down other universities, but also affected UW-Madison. It was done by a group called the Shiny Hunters. And they appear to be behind this outage of the instructional software that universities of Wisconsin uses for final exams and assignments. It's called Canvas, and the Shiny Hunters actually targeted this system, and it's an online course management that is used by colleges. It's used for course material, course work submission, exams, and grading. All campuses of the University of Wisconsin have been affected by this hack. University of Wisconsin-Madison reported that Canvas became unavailable around 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, disrupting finals preparations. Not a great time for this to be happening. Now, UW-Madison issued a statement saying, quote, "We are aware of the outage and multiple teams are working with the Universities of Wisconsin administration to address this issue on behalf of our students." Now, if Canvas prompts you to perform any action, this is for anybody listening, this is from the university, such as clicking a link, logging in, resetting your password, or completing any tasks, do not proceed, says the university. These prompts may not be legitimate while the system is down. We will send a follow-up notification when Canvas is back online. This sounds like an absolute nightmare.
It's
My
horrible.
Goodness.
Is it time for schools to scale back on technology in the classroom and go back to number two pencils and Scantron tests? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. They say that no passwords, dates of birth, yeah, or government identifiers, financial information, etc., are involved in the breach. But now I'm too old to have used Canvas.
Me
in
too.
School. But we had to fill, you know, it was essay tests or it was Scantron multiple choice with your number two pencil. Parker.
You are not too old.
First of all, Parker, for the elders amongst us, can you give us a quick what is Canvas really quick? And then how much did you rely on it when you were in college?
So Canvas, essentially every class that you are in has a Canvas page. Okay. You can find all of your class resources on there, like everything from the syllabus to your assignments to your grades. Basically, your lifeline to your class is Canvas, frankly.
Oh, wow.
So it is a huge thing. Like, they are... sorry.
Screwed?
You're screwed. I'm really sorry, students, my friends. I am sorry you are screwed, because I expect that 99% of teachers only had their grades kept in Canvas.
Wow.
So I don't know what's going to happen to this last semester of work.
We've got people chiming in on the text line this morning, and if you would like to get in on this conversation, 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. Brian, who's listening on WXCO in Wausau, says that this is affecting the Wausau School District as well. We have Todd, who is listening on WMDX this morning. He is from the north side. He's driving in Madison, and he wanted to talk about the story earlier with the drivers. He says that black and brown drivers, he notices them disproportionately, and he seems to notice them driving carefully and obeying traffic laws when maybe he's going to run a yellow light or so, or maybe going a little faster, and he's trying to get around other drivers. But when we're
talking— Back to the breach.
Yes, when we talk about this breach, I actually reached out to one of the good friends of this show, Howard Schwaber, who is a professor emeritus of American politics and political theory. As a former professor over there, I wanted to know his take on Canvas, and this is what he said to me last night. It's become an indispensable technology, especially since in the post-pandemic era, there is so much more emphasis on remote learning, blended classrooms, and the use of online platforms in general. If Canvas were to be lost or become generally insecure, universities would have to make major adjustments. And again, that is from somebody who has used Canvas to teach those classes, Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber.
And I've taught with different, like in grade school, we didn't have Canvas, but we had ClassKick and we had other programs where all of your assignments were in there. And it's gone down a few times, and it pretty much paralyzes the school. So I can't imagine on there. According to this hacker group, they're about 9,000. They hit about 9,000 universities across the country. So I can't imagine what's going on. I'd love to hear. I don't know how many students are listening. Well, you're not studying for your finals because you can't get into your stuff. So you got some free time. If you're still up drinking from last night, you can give us a call, 855-75-CIVIC. How is this affecting you? Or if you're an instructor at one of these, because as Brian said, Wausau schools were affected by this too. Mm-hmm. So if you're a teacher, if you're a professor, if you're dealing with this, we want to hear firsthand how it is affecting you. So back to Parker for just a minute. Do you still buy books? Is that a dumb question? You said all the resources are on this Canvas, is it linked to books and everything?
It can be. It depends on your university. So I went to UW-Whitewater, where textbooks were actually part of your tuition, so that was already covered for me. I don't believe that's the case at most universities. I believe you do have to still buy your textbooks. I'm assuming you're asking more about like actual book versus online book is more the question.
Yeah, where you have to, you know, old school books. It's like I had a backpack full of books that I had to carry around campus.
It's a mix. For the most part, I still had actual books. I think I had one or two online textbooks. Frank, sure. I know that you probably were kind of in the age of as online textbooks were becoming more of a thing.
Did you have Canvas too, Frank?
Yeah.
I did have Canvas. It depended on, now I graduated in 2016. It depended on the professor of how much they wanted to lean into it. Parker and I, we both did media. I think most of my classes as a upperclassman were more hands-on. We don't need a book. It's all instructional, working with equipment and editing and stuff. Yeah. But before then are your gen eds. It's Canvas, man. That's your thing.
Okay.
All your coursework is submitted through there.
Mm-hmm.
We have John chiming in over on our YouTube chat this morning. He says, must have been the same issue with Oshkosh schools. He also went on to say that as a parent, I will say using Canvas is quite frustrating when working normally. Go back to email and heaven forbid sending forms home in the backpacks.
Because you would send all the...
Yes.
All,
right.
Yes.
Especially in... For elementary and high school, all the correspondence between the teachers go home that way.
Yeah.
It's, and if you have parents who are not, and that's becoming less and less as younger people become parents, who are not tech savvy, in my district, a lot of people who didn't speak English, a lot of immigrants in the community, it was hard to, translate all that stuff and hard to use the technology. It's amazing though. So did you have to go to class if everything was on your computer? Could you just stay home?
Depending on
the class,
there were, as somebody who may not have been the best student sophomore year and slept through many alarms because I had an awful sleep schedule, there were some gen ed classes like my stats class where I really did not need to be there because everything was on Canvas.
Because I'm going to fail anyway.
Yeah, on my own time, I would read the material, do my worksheet on Canvas, submit my quiz on Canvas.
Yeah.
Wow.
And if they didn't have an attendance policy, I'm just sticking with Canvas.
The attendance
but also,
policy was huge.
Yeah, dude,
I know. I had to retake a class,
even though
I got an A+ in it. But anyway, I'm
you
still
didn't show
mad
up?
About it.
My older son graduated from Milwaukee Area Technical College last year. Canvas, huge part of their curriculum because that is a tech school. Everything for their discipline is very hands-on. All gen eds, though. Anything gen ed related was all through Canvas. And in fact, he called me about this last night, and he's like, they are in so much trouble. And he's got friends who are supposed to be graduating this spring, and he's like, they can't physically get into their gen ed programs. Like, they can't log in, they can't do anything, and he's like, you have to have those grades in order to finish your discipline.
It seems like it adds another level of cost and another wall. And I know... Like to us, laptops and things are just, that's commonplace. But there's a lot of people who can't, laptops are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So are textbooks, though.
Yeah.
I understand. I remember the bill for those textbooks and the weight. That's why I had guns, man, in college just from lifting
especially
my books.
Especially when you need them for your classes, which is why I actually like that Whitewater includes them as part of the tuition. But just in case anybody's wondering, as we talk about just the University of Madison, and as people chime in this morning, we are hearing about other school districts, local school districts in this Shiny Hunters hack. UW-Madison alone has an enrollment of around 50,000 students.
That's too big.
Yeah.
That's so big.
This is going to be a problem for the next few days.
It is going to be a problem. Oh, Shiny Hunters, we don't like you. You know what we do like? We like swiping and or staying. And so we're going to do that next. It's Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. Big Friday edition. It is 7:19 on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
7:22 right now. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. It is time for Swipe or Stay, where we're going to talk a little pop culture for a mere 7 minutes and let the politics breathe and current events for just a moment or so with our senior producer, Frank. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Also, Parker, real quick, and for everybody on the live stream, as we were talking between breaks, let me tell you my story after this segment about when I had to use Duo for the first time.
All right.
Perfect.
Interesting. Anyway,
swiping and staying.
We are swiping and staying. Here's how it's going to work. I'm going to read some pop culture headlines, and Brian and Jamie are going to have to decide whether they want to hear more of it or if they want to swipe on to the next one. And Parker can be the tiebreaker if we need him. So we're going to get on to story number one. We have a Love Boat scandal.
Oh,
Love Boat scandal. Ooh. The Love Boat.
I like a scandal. I like a good scandal stay.
All right. So this was a trick to get Brian to agree to this story. We have a Diana Russini and Mike Vrabel update.
Oh, this will go in your permanent file.
Put it in canvas, Brian. Put the grade in canvas. It turns out that the two rented a boat together in Tennessee of June 2021.
Wow.
It was a 2 to 3 hour private excursion between the two. Now, here's the kicker.
Yes.
Russini was about 6 months pregnant at the time. Now, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying, there's been a lot of speculation about the timeline of this relationship and affair.
Yeah.
And there have been some rumors, some stories. Everyone's like, oh my God,
baseless.
But the timeline is starting to line up a little bit. And it's leading to a possible bombshell report. And I did say, if we get any more news, it's going to be leading towards that, or that news is going to drop. Now, I'm not going to go out and say what it is. It's pure speculation at this point, and we can't confirm or deny any such rumors. But there could be an update in the future. See, we Brian, aren't you happy?
We can confirm that this this segment is duplicitous at best and downright fraudulent at worst.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Story two.
I don't know those big words. Musician says to leave his kids with his fortune would be abuse.
I hate these people. Stay.
Stay.
Any guesses on which musician said this?
Oh, gosh.
I want to...
No idea.
I want to say Kanye.
Think older.
Older.
Mick Jagger.
It is not Mick Jagger. Jamie?
We'll just throw Bon Jovi.
It is not Bon Jovi. So Sting has come out and doubled down on not leaving his massive fortune with his kids. He said, the worst thing you can do to a kid is say, you don't have to work. I think that's a form of abuse that I hope I'm never guilty of. All of my kids have been blessed with this extraordinary work ethic. Whether it's the DNA of it or whether I've said to them, guys, you've got to work. I'm spending our money. I'm paying for your education. You've got shoes on your feet. Go get to work. He went on to say, I don't think it's cruel. I think there's a kindness there and a trust in them that they will make their own way. They're tough, my kids. Now, Sting's net worth is $500 million.
Wow.
If I'm one of his kids, I'm pissed.
Of course you are.
$500 million? Come on, leave some crumbs.
I agree. See, but I agree in part with the, you want to have, you want the kids to be able to do things on their own. You want them to, but I also know that down the road, you know, you leave them something.
Put it in a trust so they only get so much so often, right? Mm-hmm. Or something like that.
You can't just give it all away. I mean, I understand a work ethic. I understand not spoiling kids. I think people who earn all that money and never do anything, look at some of the children of power we see now, or the rich kids that have never had to work a day in their lives.
Right.
That's wrong. That is cruel.
Agreed.
But not leaving your kids something out of your fortune. Sit down.
Here's
go
a
have
thing.
Some more
How about
9 hours
you know.
Here's a question.
More tantric loving.
I was just going to say, that was going to be my next question. Is he leaving it to like a tantric yoga studio? Is that what he's doing?
He hasn't said.
Oh, okay. All right. Just checking.
He's a pretentious jerk.
He really, yeah, just ask Stuart Copeland,
yeah,
his drummer, that question.
Story three.
Let's move on to story three. Disney cruise ship at the center of child crime.
You broke up a little. Will you repeat the headline, please?
Disney cruise ship at the center of child crime.
Child crime in Disney?
Oh.
The mouse? I'm in. Stay.
This feels like Scandal again, so I'll stay.
So several Disney cruise ship staff members were reportedly arrested last month as part of a larger investigation into child sexual abuse material crimes.
God.
Oh, yeah.
That is not the happiest boat on the water.
It sure isn't. Customs and Border Protection agents boarded 8 cruise ships in San Diego as part of an ongoing enforcement operation between April 23rd and April 27th. One of the cruise ships belonging to Disney, the California Post reported. Disney went on to say they have zero tolerance for all of this, yada, yada, yada. It's still under investigation. We don't know what exactly the material was, where the material came from at the moment. We just know that some members of the Disney cruise. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
That's insanity.
It's scary.
That's stunning, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disney is, that's going to cause quite a ripple at Disney because they pride themselves on everything being picture perfect all the time. When
what
we come
back. What a
story
to end on.
Yes. We will go back to a cruise ship and talk Hantavirus after this. It's Daybreak on the City.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you are listening in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or in La Crosse on WXCO or in Hayward on WBZH, we're glad that you are joining us on this Friday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. If you've been paying attention to the news, you know that a deadly outbreak of the rare hantavirus unfolded over the course of weeks on a cruise ship that sailed from Argentina toward Antarctica and then across the Atlantic Ocean. According to information from the cruise operator, the World Health Organization, and ship tracking data. Now, nearly a month has passed between when an elderly Dutch man fell sick and died in the South Atlantic, and laboratory tests in South Africa first confirmed hantavirus infections. So what is hantavirus? How does it spread? And should there be concern outside of the other passengers and crew on the ship? Dr. James Conway is a pediatric infectious disease specialist with UW Health, and he joins us now. Dr. Conway, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time. So most of us have never heard of hantavirus. What is hantavirus, and how contagious a disease is it?
Yeah, so hantaviruses are a whole group of viruses that primarily live in rodents, and they're found all across the world. There was a study some years ago that they're actually found in the rodents that live in every national park in the United States. So these are actually ubiquitous viruses. They're everywhere. There's lots and lots of different versions. People maybe would remember what was called the Four Corners disease some years ago, or what was later named Sinombre virus, a virus of no name because Four Corners then hurt their tourism industry. But hantaviruses are everywhere. And, you know, typically they're diseases that are caused when rodent excreta, so rodent stool, gets dried out. And then as people go in and clean places up and aerosolize that stuff, so they're kind of sweeping, they make it into a dust storm and inhale it. And that's typically how people catch hantaviruses. And again, they've been around forever. They're all over the world. And there are periodic outbreaks. This one's unusual because this is one of the rare versions of hantavirus that can actually be transmitted human to human.
Dr. Conway, when you say rare, does that mean that I understand that we're on land right now for a lot of us. We're not on these cruise ships, but when you say rare, does that mean that people shouldn't worry? Is this just a less common but still serious illness? Kind of explain that to us.
Yeah, so there's two sides to that kind of discussion. I mean, I think one thing for people to always remember is that, again, hantaviruses are everywhere. So if you're cleaning out your cabin or doing some, you know, work where there's a lot of rodents around, we always tell people, like, wear a mask when you're cleaning out the cabin or cleaning out the garage where there might be rodent droppings, because as those dry out, you know, the reason we don't see major outbreaks, even though these things are everywhere, is because most of the time that stuff stays kind of moist. It's when it gets dried out and then becomes sort of dust particles. And so, like, it's always a risk, and we, you know, have periodic cases here in the United States. What the rare part is that this particular strain, Andean hantavirus, is the one that actually is able to be transmitted from one human to another. The other part of the sort of the rare part is, you know, cruise ships are in some ways kind of the ideal place for transmission. Schools and cruise ships sort of have a lot of similarities. You put a bunch of people in close quarters, and, you know, we've seen outbreaks of norovirus, of bad influenza on cruise ships. You know, people have certainly recognized the fact that COVID spread pretty widely. There were a couple of cruise ship outbreaks early in the COVID pandemic. So cruise ships do put people into these close quarters. And so you get a couple people with a very contagious disease in close contact with other people, and they're having sustained contact with them. And so this was sort of, in some ways, kind of a perfect storm of just the right virus being brought onto a cruise ship with just the right number of people that were confined for a period of time as they're crossing the Atlantic. And so it was sort of everything came together to give this an opportunity to happen.
So let's go back real quick, Doctor. And Dr. Jim Conway is our guest. He's an infectious disease, pediatric infectious disease specialist with UW Health. So the strain of the virus that is able to be transmitted person to person rather than just from the droppings in the dust, that's always been around. This is not some sort of new strain that we're seeing just come out on this cruise ship.
Yeah, I mean, it's been around. I mean, we don't know exactly how long, but I mean, these things, you know, there's stuff in like old literature. You know, there's a version people may have heard of, the Crimean Congo fever, you know, used to devastate explorers and, you know, during wars in the 1800s. So, I mean, these things have been around for a while, but this particular strain, we've known about it, but, you know, it hasn't reared its head very often. Okay. And it's really isolated to the Andean mountain area down in South America. So this really was sort of that combination of, you know, people that had been traveling in that area, somehow picked it up somewhere in that area, got onto this cruise ship, and then being in close contact with other people, then spread it to other people. Now, I think the other piece of this, just, you know, as we kind of close the loop, is that part of the problem with these things, and the reason I think there is such concern at the WHO level, is that they have very long incubation periods. So people can kind of get exposed and be walking around incubating this for up to a couple months.
Oh,
and
wow.
So that's why, you know, initially they had everybody sort of locked down on this ship and didn't know what to do. And they were sort of just stuck there anchored. They're now letting people come off the ship, but they're trying to make sure that they've got a way of keeping in contact with those people. There's already some of the travelers from the United States who are on that ship who have already returned to the U.S.
Are they still contagious as it's incubating, or we just don't know?
We don't know. Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, is that while they're incubating it, they're probably not that contagious. The thought is they're mostly contagious once they develop symptoms. These are typically things that cause pneumonia, you know, pulmonary symptoms, and mm-hmm. So cough and sneezing and things like that. A lot of the hantaviruses also secondarily, as they spread through the body, cause a lot of kidney damage. And so that's where they got kind of a lot of their reputation. So that's the interesting and kind of tricky part of this, is that, you know, you can't keep these people trapped there forever on the boat, but also, like, releasing them back into the wild does, you know, potentially raise some risk if they're out there incubating. And so that's the reason with contact tracing, which hopefully we're good at now after COVID, people are going to be able to, in the public health sphere, keep track of these people. And if they get any symptoms, then immediately lock them down into a quarantine.
Now, you just mentioned some of those symptoms. And from what I've read, and I would love for you to correct me if I'm wrong, but it starts for some people a little bit like the flu, right? Or
totally,
and some people have the runny noses and things. So at this stage of, if you're in Wisconsin, I'm an allergy sufferer. I wouldn't know the difference if I'm just having an allergy or if I'm actually coming down with something more serious. So how can people tell the difference if they are concerned or have been on a cruise ship, or, you know, maybe think they've come into contact?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, we're fortunate in some ways that this is happening in the time of the year that's happening, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, because there isn't a ton of influenza circulating. There isn't a ton of RSV circulating. There isn't a ton of COVID circulating, knock wood. You know, so those are the things that are more mimics of what this type of illness starts as, because it does, you're right, starts as, you know, runny nose, cough, but the fever is the critical part of it. I mean, people have high fever as they come down with symptoms. So fortunately, allergy sufferers, you know, it's usually a lot of annoying upper respiratory symptoms, but the fever is the part that distinguishes it. And, you know, even though there are always going to be respiratory viruses circulating, you know, cold viruses and things like that, typically in adults, they don't cause a whole lot of fever. So when you've got respiratory symptoms with a fever, you know, and especially in the winter months, that's RSV or COVID or influenza. Now, for this group of individuals, they're going to be watching very closely for any kind of respiratory symptoms with a fever. I'm hopeful and I'm certain that, you know, if they develop that and if people are taking this seriously and being responsible, those people immediately go into isolation, you know, hopefully in a place with good air circulation. Hospitals are equipped with these special rooms that have special circulation systems that keep the air circulation separate from the rest of the hospital. So, you know, that part that can be managed, but it's being vigilant and knowing that this can kind of take a while before symptoms show up.
Doctor, you mentioned the two strains, this Andy strain that's happening with the cruise ship and the hantavirus that we can get from just rodent droppings around here. Are the results the same? Are the effects of the virus the same from each strain? So, which is why you stressed earlier, make sure you're wearing a mask if you're cleaning out your cabin, if you're cleaning up mouse droppings or rodent droppings or whatever.
Yeah, no, they have subtly different symptoms depending on which strain and where you picked it up in the world. I mean, they all have the way you catch these is usually inhaling some of this stuff. So all of them, you know, start out with a pulmonary, you know, respiratory types of symptoms. Some of them, as they progress, are more serious and actually involve spread through the body, and the kidneys sort of take the brunt of the hit. And so kidney failure is sort of one version of these things, but they're all a little bit different as they act out. Okay. You know, many of the strains here in the United States don't have such a high mortality rate. This Andean strain, you know, has a pretty high mortality rate, but half the people that get it die from it. So, wow. You know, that's the reason it's such a big deal from a public health standpoint is you got all these people that have been exposed. You know, the idea is the people that have had the brunt of it, you know, and had a lot more exposure, like the couple that were together, you know, so they both died because they were in close contact with each other. And then some of the people that were in close contact with them have had more serious disease. You know, there's somebody in an ICU in South Africa. Meanwhile, there's other people that have presumed symptoms but are actually doing okay with it and probably didn't get quite as big a hit. So there is like this dose effect inoculum that makes it more likely you're going to get a more serious case of the disease.
We're talking with Dr. Jim Conway. He is with UW Health. He is a pediatric infectious disease doctor. When we're talking about the hantavirus and all of these multiple countries that are now involved, how coordinated does that global response to something like this get? And what role does the U.S. play in this?
That's a great question, Jamie. You know, I think we've all realized after the COVID pandemic that public health is not a particularly well-coordinated system in our country, you know, that each state sort of had its own approach for a while. CDC, you know, at least for much of this, did kind of steer the ship and keep things relatively coordinated. At the international level, WHO really has most of the responsibility for doing that. CDC has always honestly been, you know, sort of the big dog, you know, as far as being the major advisor to WHO. You know, and there's clearly signals, the Infectious Disease Society of America that I'm a member of, you know, issued some statements today that they're a little concerned that the CDC hasn't been quite as front and center as it normally would be in these kinds of things. WHO, to their credit, I think, you know, sort of knew, especially since the U.S. has withdrawn from WHO at some level, realized that they were going to be the major player in this. And so they've actually done a really very nice job so far of both being very vigilant about this, but also getting information out there. You know, CDC's finally updated the websites overnight and has finally got some information out there. But they've been a little slow, to be honest, in my opinion, in making this clear. And so, fortunately, mainstream media has actually picked it up and done a pretty good job of getting the word out there. But normally by now, we would have had a lot more statements and publicity from CDC directly, sort of giving people a clear message about this. You know, again, WHO's done a very nice job for most of the world in kind of coordinating this. And I do, as I've read about it, I'm not directly involved in it, but it does seem that the cruise ship operator has also been very responsible about this and has not tried to pull any fast ones about this, that they've been very careful. They've had some of the crew have gotten sick as well. And so they've also taken it very seriously. But it is a little bit of a challenge and certainly an eye-opening thing every time one of these happens when we realize how fragmented public health is around the world still to this day.
doctor, but we've got about a minute left before we let you go. And not to sound hysterical and definitely not to cause any panic, but you talked about some of the people in the U.S. who were on the ship, who are in their incubation periods, being let, in your words, out into the wild. Do we need to start worrying about a possible pandemic again if people are getting off the boat and they're incubated and we are relying on that contact tracing that may or may not be as good as we hope? Should we start to be concerned?
Yeah, I don't think I would put this into that category at this point. I mean, this has to be a really concerted time in contact. So it's not something like COVID or flu or more casual contact, coughing and sneezing. You really have to be in sustained contact with people to have this spread. So at this point, the way the virus acts, I wouldn't call this a pandemic risk. But, you know, you always worry as these things get reintroduced into new areas.
Well, Dr. Conway, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for being here. It is.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It is 7:52 right now. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. You may not know this, but this is National Travel and Tourism Week. Everybody in Wisconsin knows how much tourism adds to the state's economy. Well, the governor is traveling all across Wisconsin to highlight the importance of tourism. And on Tuesday, the governor's tour took him to Cable Natural History Museum. Civic Media's reporter for WZBZH and WHSM, Maddie Schaefer, joins us now. She was there. She saw the governor. Welcome, Maddie. We're glad you're here. Very exciting.
Hi.
So give us a little background on the Cable History Museum and what the governor was doing up there.
Yeah, so the Cable Natural History Museum is a great place. I've actually known it for a while, but it was nice to be back. They are a little museum tucked away in Cable, Wisconsin. They're the only accredited museum in the North Woods, pretty much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they get about 10,000 visitors a year. So, you know, they're a big part of what, you know, brings tourism to this area. And this year they were doing a very cool wetlands exhibit. So they change their exhibits every once in a while, you know, to teach children about wildlife and all of the good things around the North Woods here. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Maddie, for people who haven't maybe been to that part of Wisconsin, maybe not familiar with it, what makes Cable such, besides the Natural History Museum, what other things in the area make Cable such a good draw for tourists? Why do they love to come to the area?
Yeah, I mean, I would say restaurants is a big thing, but they do a lot of fun activities. I know the Cable Chamber works hard there to put on a lot of events. They do like a fall festival that people love. Yeah, it's a small town, but you know, it brings a lot of people and tourism is really what makes a small town like that thrive. I mean, they're also a part of the American Birkebeiner, you know, with the trails close by, in Sealy. So I know that's a huge part for them too, along with Hayward, but yeah.
Maggie Schaefer's our guest. She is Civic Media's reporter in Hayward and the North Woods. So we talk a lot about how important tourism is, Maggie. What are the numbers coming out of the DNR about, and the Wisconsin Department of Tourism rather? How much of an impact does tourism have here in Wisconsin?
I can't think of an exact number, but it's huge for Northern Wisconsin right now.
How about 25.8 billion?
Yes.
I just pulled that from your story. I'm not trying to one up you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I forgot I put it in there. Sorry. It's been a long time. Yeah. Yes, it's huge for this area. I mean, and we in, you know, Northern Wisconsin contributes to a lot of that,
yes,
for Wisconsin as a state whole, you know. But yeah, it's huge for this area, but it's also huge for Wisconsin's economy in general. And, you know, like I said, it's what makes, you know, the state and Northern Wisconsin thrive.
Maddie Schaefer is our guest. She is Civic Media's reporter for WBZH and WHSM in the Northwoods, as we like to call it. Now, when the governor was in Cable and he was visiting the museum, did he lay out any specific plans, anything that he talked about specifically that would help tourism in the area grow even more, Maddie?
Yeah, we asked him a little bit, but he kind of just highlighted, you know, what he's done so far, and, you know, how he, since he's came into office, he's been very much pushing for tourism efforts in the state, and a lot of his plans to, you know, keep it running for everybody. But yeah, he, you know, just talked a lot about, you know, how great the Cable area is doing for their efforts in tourism and how it draws so many people each year. And what they're doing is amazing work. It's a great place to visit, and it's doing great things.
So the governor wasn't done, right? You said he stayed in Cable for about an hour and a half. He was continuing his tour. Where was he off to next?
He was going to Athens. So he was there for about an hour and a half and then got on a plane and flew there. It was a busy day for him.
Wow. Any idea where he was going in Athens?
I can't remember where he was.
Oh, there we go.
Northwoods internet broke up a little bit.
So, sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Good. It's not your fault.
You're good. So obviously, as we talk about the Northwoods, for people listening in other parts of the state this morning, outdoor recreation is a huge focus. What as the weather gets nicer, right? What kind of activities are people going to be experiencing, or what can they do? Since I know you're so familiar with the area, Maddie, what are some things that people could do this summer to help boost that tourism industry in the area?
Yeah. So first thing is that, you know, trails are starting to open up. So people are biking. People are getting on the ATV and UTVs out here. A huge one is fishing. Fishing has a huge impact to our state's economy, but also, you know, funding the DNR and what they do. And if you haven't heard, you know, they've been struggling a little bit with their funds. So fishing is a huge one. You know, getting on a boat, doing other activities like skiing and, you know, wakeboarding, that's a big one. But yeah, it's everybody's getting a little excited up here now that it's starting to warm up a little bit.
Good deal. Well, it's always great to talk to you, Maddie, and we'll try to send more people up there with their full wallets to leave their money in the Northwoods. Maddie Schaefer is Civic Media's reporter in Hayward. You can read her work at civicmedia.us, and you can always listen to her if you are listening to WBZH or WHSM. Maddie, always a pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah, again, one more thing. It's 114.4 million visits from tourists last year in Wisconsin.
It's crazy.
So
yes.
this is a huge, huge deal. And I'm glad the governor is jetting around, spending some time in places that aren't usually in the spotlight in the state. So we get them out there. When we come back, oh my goodness, it's more S You Need to Know. If you're listening on WMDX, we will talk to you later, but you can always jump over to our YouTube or Facebook streams or listen on the Civic Media app. We will talk to you. It's Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.